Well, hello, everybody. You're listening to Woodworkers Podcast. I'm Ben Brunick, and I'm joined, as always, with Philip Morley and Ramon Valdez. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing good.
Fantastic, man. How you doing?
Great. Normal. Good. Normal fare. Say, we've got a special guest on the podcast tonight, Matt Kenny, author, furniture maker, writer, teacher, has the book 52 Boxes in 52 Weeks. I think a lot of you probably know him from Fine Woodworking and Shop Talk Live, right? That's the podcast? Jeez, what the hell's the name of the podcast?
Yeah, you don't know the name of the podcast I was on?
Terrible. Shop Talk Live or what's, and then there's, Jesus, I can't. The other, Fine Woodworking Live, Christ.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Sorry. Sorry.
You guys have, they have done some impressive research.
You think we have time to research this shit?
Yeah. That's what Craig said last time when he was on. You don't know me at all.
I'm not even Matt Kenny talking about.
Right. Who the hell is this guy?
Who's Matt Kenny?
Yeah, Craig was funny, man. He kind of scared me a little bit.
He's like, Craig, damn, Phil, you don't know me at all.
I know, it's like, oh, shit.
Listen, Thibodeau will hunt you down.
I believe it. Yeah, you anyway, were right, Ben. It's Shop Talk Live.
Shop Talk Live.
Phil's got his screen up.
Yeah, Phil's Googling it right now. Phil doesn't know who I am.
Matt Kenny, it's fantastic to have you on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time, man. This
sure,
is going to
no
be good.
Problem. Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Sadly, the last time I was down in Texas, I lost 3 big straight hands of poker to Phil, and that's why I'm doing this.
Wait, we have to pay you? Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, good talk to you again. It's been a while.
I was going to ask you, the 52 box, why not 52 chairs in 52 weeks? No, I'm just kidding. I think the name is, the title is brilliant. It's very, it's appealing for one. Where did you get the idea or the inspiration for that book?
Well, initially I just wanted to become a better designer and better furniture box maker.
Sure.
And I knew that the way to do that was just to make a lot of boxes.
Yeah, so, that is awesome. Did you like have 15 before you started? So you could jump ahead. That's what I would have had to have done.
I think
for those weeks that I was slacking.
Well, I think I made 3 before I announced that I was doing it. Uh-huh. But the 52 weeks started when I started making the boxes, not when I announced it. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I got a little bit of a head start, but not much. And there were times when, you know, because at the time I was still working at Fine Woodworking, and I traveled a lot for work, and, you know, I'm a dad. At the time I was married, and it was a tough balancing act to get all of those boxes made.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know? Sure, that would be a challenge.
Yeah. But it was fun. I loved it. Because, you know, I love being in the shop, and I love making stuff, and it was a great way to ensure that I was out in the shop building.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was this something like you kind of bounce around when you were at the magazine with the rest of the guys there? Like, did someone pitch this idea to you, or you just decided, hey, I'm going to challenge myself to build 52 boxes in 52 weeks. Why shouldn't I just write a book about it?
Well, so yeah, I came up with the idea on my own. I get asked about where the idea came from, and there's like several different explanations of where the idea came from, but they're all sort of concurrent. But I always knew that if I did this, if I could make 52 boxes in a year, that would provide me with sort of the knowledge and background to write a book about making boxes.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're pretty in depth, but
right.
You know, with that much, that's a lot of work.
And I already had been making a lot of boxes prior to that. But it wasn't until late, like, you know, I started writing about it on my website and people started reading it and people were getting excited about it. It wasn't until, you know, until later that I realized that just the project in and of itself would make a decent book.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. So the idea wasn't to make a book about just the project.
Okay. That's what I wasn't sure of. You know, I have your book, and if I probably read it, I probably would notice. But it's got so many pretty pictures, and you know me, I like pictures.
You do like pictures, yeah.
And emojis.
Yeah, Phil loves his freaking emojis. Oh, my God.
It's because I can't spell, man.
The title is very, it's intriguing. I just ordered it, actually.
God, you were really good at your research there.
it's a cool idea in that it forces you. I mean, if you're going to be making that many, it's going to force you into the design work.
Yeah, it was always about design. Mm-hmm. Learning to become a better designer. And you do that just like you do anything, through repetition. But I do think in furniture making, or in any craft, that you can't just design. You also have to make those designs. You have to execute them. Because right. you learn a lot about how to design well by making the designs. You know, you learn what works and what doesn't work. And so it was always about design, but it also became a great exercise in making.
Sure. Right. Well, so, you know, the thing I love about the boxes, I mean, I noticed kind of just it goes hand in hand with probably your design philosophy, but, you know, less is more type thing. But, you know, you see 52 boxes, you think you'd have to start getting pretty crazy to make them so unique and different. And you kind of proven that with this design, you don't have to get too fussy or too crazy with it. And you have a very simple form, but they are all very unique and beautifully done.
Well, first, thanks, Phil. That means a lot coming from you.
I don't mean it. But...
I know you don't mean it, but
you know
the fact
I mean
that
it.
You would even faint it is impressive.
It's true, though, right? You could get nuts. I see some boxes, and they're crazy. You know, it's like there's so much going on.
So when I first started to woodworking, and I would check out books from the library or whatever, and I've always liked making boxes, and I would get books about making boxes, and all the boxes to me looked really dated. You know, it's like, oh, that would fit in the 80s.
Yeah.
And my sense of, you know, my aesthetic is much more modern than that. And I wanted to make boxes that looked different from the majority of the stuff you see getting made by other well-known box makers. And right. I mean, I already had that in me, and it was just sort of trying to bring it out. But you don't need to get complicated to make beautiful things. I don't believe.
Right. I think it can be a challenge to actually, you know, approach it with the less is more. And sometimes simple is actually more complicated as far as joinery and everything, but toning back is really that sometimes is the challenge.
Right.
It is, you know? Yeah, definitely. Making something that's simple and yet beautiful is in fact difficult.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's about the grain. That's where the grain selection, and that's what you know, obviously you do amazingly at, and that makes the difference. If you pick out the selection of the wood poorly, it's going to really reflect on such a simple, clean piece because it's not hiding.
Definitely. Yeah, there's no place for it to hide. And it's right, in arm's reach.
Right. Well, and I love the fact that I've never done any of this, and it definitely, now I can't because you've done it and I'll just be copying you, but the whole milk paint, I love the idea of... it's kind of grounded in that traditional shaker, but then mixed into this, you know, really modern, clean line stuff. And it just, that little, little bit of color is really amazing. I love that balance you play with.
Yeah, I like color too, and it's just something that came about organically for me. Because I would see people like fit out the interior of boxes with like flocking and all this other stuff, right? and to me, I didn't like it. So right. I started to think, you open something up. I kind of like that there's a bright splash of color. Right. And but fabric also has texture, and it introduces another element to the design. So I love the colors of milk paint and the way that it's not a uniform color. It's right. I think you're right. Like, I never noticed this about myself, but Pekovich told me this. He was like, you take traditional materials and you use them in very right. unusual ways or modern
yeah.
ways.
Modern ways. You simplify it. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Where are the majority of these boxes now?
They're at my student's house.
Yeah, she's very kind to me. Yeah.
It's been awesome seeing them up personally.
Yeah. And Phil always sends me a text criticizing them.
I will next time.
Yeah. Some of them, a number of them I've sold.
Yeah.
Some of them I gave away to people who are dear to me. Many of them are just sitting in cardboard boxes at my house. So I am trying to sell them and find people to buy them. But, right. For me, it's already paid for itself. The sure. book has sold really well. And the book, the entire project has been extremely beneficial for me professionally, in getting me teaching jobs and stuff like that. So yeah. I'm not really too concerned about selling them all off, but
it's kind of sure. like it's kind of like a byproduct in a way, right? It's like, it wasn't ultimately about selling the boxes. It was about the book, and then that's brought a ton of other avenues, and if you sell some boxes here and there, that's great. That's kind of awesome.
Well, really, ultimately, initially, it was all about just becoming a better designer.
Right.
And I think I did. And everything else that's happened as a result of that is, a benefit that I did not anticipate.
That's awesome.
Did you have a lot of the ideas for them as you went, or did some of them come as you built the ones you were working on? Ideas yeah. for future ones?
It was definitely like that, where when I made the first two boxes, I had no idea what the third box was going to be like.
That's awesome.
And as I was making them, I was able to take what I like, I thought that was successful in that box, and this was successful in this box, and start to push my design in a direction I would never have anticipated. So it was definitely was a very organic and evolutionary process.
I'm excited to get your book, especially after hearing, your experience with the process, the evolution of your boxes as you were making them. Did, when you got toward, 45, 46, were you like seeing the finish line and you could have kept going? Like you could have that's a lot of work. Don't get me wrong, but. Do you know what I mean? Like at 52, are you like, maybe I should just do,
60.
Yeah, I'll go a year and a half.
Well, yeah, I definitely could have kept going and designing new and different boxes. And I've made stuff since then that carried on what I was doing then.
Right.
And so I was kind of bummed out when it ended, because it was I loved being in the shop, and I love the challenge of designing something every week or so, and pushing myself to find new ways to skin the cat, so to speak,
Sure.
And yeah, and I do think the possibilities are limitless, that you could continuously make and remake a box or a cabinet or a sideboard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's
you
that's
could, you
why
can remake. You could remake the same box and right. you know, instill different design into it.
Right, right. Easily. That's why we're custom furniture makers. I mean, it's ultimately, it's for the most part, we're doing the same thing again and again, but it's a new twist to it. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's fun about it. That's really cool. I had no idea. Like, I honestly did not realize that the book wasn't the intention. And that's, I've noticed a couple of times I keep saying you went out to do the book, and so I apologize. It's you didn't. It was about design. So that's even more cool because it totally wasn't about the book and about teaching the classes. So that's pretty awesome.
And I've told you that like 15 times.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I just don't believe you. Okay.
Hey, Matt.
Yes.
Who's this? Is this Ben?
This is Ben.
Oh, okay. Hi, Ben.
With those designs, where do you think you got the most design inspiration as you were making them, or after you had made them and you were able to like have them sit someplace and be able to see them on occasion? Does that make sense as far as a question? Like,
yeah, do you think where did I get my, what has influenced me the most in my design?
Well, what right? I mean was, is when you were doing the designs, do you think that the most inspiration came to you like as you were building those boxes, or do you think it came after the fact that after you had built them and now maybe you can see them, now they're a physical thing that's around, that maybe, you know, a week later you take a look at that thing and it sparks something else,
for another box.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I mean, sometimes you get inspiration as you're building something, because you look at something, you're like, oh, this would be better if it was over here, or maybe, you know, maybe some, you know, a different take on this is evident when you're making it. But mm-hmm. I think also having the physical object and being able to let it sit on a shelf or whatever and kind of steep so that you can see it, and then maybe later an inspiration comes.
Well, he just put it in a cardboard box.
Yeah.
Done with that one in the box.
Chuck them in storage. Well, I don't know if I'm going to answer your question, but I'm going to say something.
it wasn't that great of a question anyway, so go ahead.
So when I was immersed, like when I was actually doing and making all this stuff, I would have, when I started to make a box, I knew what that box was going to be. I'd already sort of drew it out a couple of times, and I knew how big it was going to be and all that kind of stuff. So, but I definitely... when I was done, I was definitely thinking about like, oh, I wish I'd done this differently, or this really worked well. And as I went along making more boxes, I would go back and grab that stuff and think about it and think about, okay, well, if I were going to do that again, how would I do it this time? What would I change? So it's really, I think it's sort of both things. It's when I make something, when I start making, I have a really clear idea of what it is I'm going to make, because that's just, I have to do that.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. That's the way that I function in the shop. Some people can do it on the fly. That's not the way I am. I like to know, I can see it in my head before I make
right,
it.
Right, sure.
And I'm going to make that thing that I see in my head.
Right.
And, but when I'm done with something and it sits for a while, like you said, I do take inspiration from it for sure, and I think about, oh well, it would have been a little more elegant if I had done this, or I should have tweaked that, and the next time I incorporate that feature or that design principle or element into something I make, I refine it.
Very cool. Now, what made you start getting into Comico? I'm kind of curious to hear about that, like what inspired you to start doing that and incorporating it with your boxes. I mean, I guess the question is, what inspired you to start doing that?
Yeah, I picked that up, Phil.
I'm really good at this, right?
Yeah, you're fantastic. You're regular Morley Schaefer.
I'm just gonna hang up.
Yeah. So, when I was at the magazine, we ran an article, a short article by John Reed Fox, who's a furniture maker in Massachusetts. He is an unbelievable master of the subtle.
Yeah.
And a lot of his work is influenced by Japanese design, and he uses Kumiko. So we ran this article and a little bit of how-to, and then Mike Pekovich started to play around with it. And I saw what he was doing, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And this was all going on when I was making the 52 boxes. So I started to just play around with framework, not the infill patterns. But after I made the boxes, I started to make Kumiko panels, like in with the Asa Noha pattern and stuff like that. And for me, it's just something that it's a very meditative practice. It's a very calming thing to do. And so for me, it is beneficial beyond just making something. In some ways, it's very therapeutic. So it's something that I really enjoy doing. And the more I've done it, I start to, you know, it's like, oh, well, I see the artistic potential of this thing. So I started making decorative panels, and I started, you know, exploring the different possibilities that that particular craft offers. And but it definitely started with Pekovich, you know.
Okay, cool. That's awesome.
That's interesting. How old is that tradition?
Oh, jeez.
Well, Pekovich is like 75.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Hundreds of years, if not more.
Yeah, it's well, what's interesting is that with, you know, with social media, it's like making a huge comeback, or maybe it's Pekovich, and maybe now it's Matt Kennedy, but you're starting to see a lot of it.
Yeah, that's
I got to admit, definitely. It always reminds me of you.
Yeah,
your hangings are fantastic. I mean,
thank you.
Especially on a painted wall, and the contrast, they just come alive.
Yeah, well, again, I think from, you know, Mike is fantastic at Kumiko, and there's no doubt that the fact that he was doing it piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. You know, he and I worked together every day for 10 years.
Yeah,
and we interacted with each other every day, and we always talked about design. We always talked about what we're working on. And, you know, he definitely rubbed off on me, and I had to take out a restraining order. So he definitely influenced me. But, I mean, I think, again, just like with milk paint and other stuff that I do, I took something that was a traditional art form and began to use it in a different way.
Right, right.
And, you know, I don't think I was, I'm sure I'm not the first person to do that. I know I'm not, but, you know, I think I have my own unique take on it.
Yeah.
The way that I'm making these decorative wall hangings. It's
kind of funny that, I mean, I think, and I guess it's just like my design preference, but, and it's the same with a lot of your design, it's taking that traditional thing, but keeping it very simple. And mm-hmm. you know, I'm not saying it's simple to do, but keeping the look of it very simple. And, you know, when you look at, I mean, it's Kumiko masters, that's all they do. And I almost, and I'm probably going to get a lot of crap about this, I almost don't appreciate that type of level as much as what kind of you and Pekovich and Fox, John Reed Fox mm-hmm. has done, because it's almost too hard to take in. It's crazy. Like, you see those entire walls, like 12-foot long walls by 9 feet tall, and it's all Kumiko, and you think it's a painting. You know,
yeah.
you go up. Once you know it, it's like, oh my God, that's crazy. Why would you ever want to do that? That is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean? It's just too much for me. And I love the idea of the simple furniture with that Kumiko, just keeping it nice and clean. It's you know, it just works really well.
I think that, you know, like you, and if you make furniture a lot, if you make furniture for a living, you know how difficult it is to take like one or two elements or three elements and turn it into something beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, something really simple that is beautiful. It's hard. It's really hard.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. And
to pull the reins back, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and still make something that people, that speaks to people. And yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I think that's, I just sound like an arrogant jerk, but I think that's what it is about the Kumiko panels I make, is that they're so simple, but at the same time they're beautiful. You know, and yeah, that's not easy to do.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. And again, that's design preference and stuff, but that definitely I can relate to that. And for anyone that doesn't know John Reed Fox, they definitely need to look him up, because his stuff is just it's a shame he's not on Instagram. You know, people get so kind of close-minded, they think if you're not on Instagram you don't exist. And it's kind of crazy how many amazing people are not on Instagram.
Well, I still don't know who this Ben guy is. Is he on Instagram?
He's on Instagram too. Yeah.
More Ben.
I know, right?
So, with designs, when you were at Fine Woodworking, you know, you're talking about working with Pekovic every day, and all the other people that are working there. When you were doing the 52 boxes, were you able to be like open talking to everyone, or did you have to kind of close off a little bit because getting outside influences? I mean, were you open to talking to everyone about the designs?
He called me all the time,
looking for pictures, inspiration.
Yeah.
Bill designed all of them.
Actually. All of them. Well, no, just 50. Yeah, 50.
That's why they all look like Manchester United logos. Manchester United
logos. Arsenal.
Arsenal, okay, sorry, yeah. They're all Gunners.
I'm from London.
Gunners, yeah. In the office, people knew what I was doing, and I would bring the boxes in as I made them. And, you know, at the magazine, there's a big variety of people. You know, there's like me and Pekovic, who are like hardcore shop junkies. And then there's, you know, like there's Betsy and Liz. Betsy is the admin and Liz is the copy editor. They both know woodworking really well, but they don't do woodworking. And, you know, they're two people that are like family to me. And so I would, you know, and Anissa's there, and, you know, I guess now, I guess Ben Strano came in after I was done. But anyways, like Ed Pernick was there. So there are people there that, you know, I'm bringing in to show it to them to get their response to see if it makes them feel something. But I wasn't looking to people. I mean, I'm fairly obstinate and stubborn. So I'm not... You know, it's not like if I go and say, hey, I'm going to make this, and someone says, well, I don't really like that.
Right.
I don't really give a shit. I don't give a shit if they like it or not, you know?
Right.
But,
well, that's the thing with Instagram, right?
Yeah. Instagram, I don't,
I'm still doing it the way I'm doing it.
Yeah. They can get upset about me dropping the F-bomb on Instagram. I don't care. But Mike and I would talk a lot about the boxes as I was going along, because a lot of times there would be technical challenges, and I would talk to Mike about it, and he and I, you know, he would say something, and that would make me think of something, and I'd come up with a solution.
That's a good relationship to have someone, because
if there's somebody that didn't like something about a box for whatever reason, there's still going to be, you know, tons more that do like it. So
It
really doesn't even matter.
I wasn't talking about people liking it or not liking it. It was more like influence, you know, like if you wanted to try to keep it so it was that you weren't getting like outside influences that steer it. You know, if you wanted to steer it yourself, I mean, I'm guessing you're a pretty strong-willed person, you're going to steer it in the direction that you want to steer it in, and also you're going to take like Mike's advice on things because you admire Mike's design aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so before I got to the magazine, you know, I was a college professor and I taught philosophy. And one of the things about, going and being involved in philosophy as an undergraduate and as a grad student and all that stuff, it's an everyday occurrence in a philosophy program for you to get criticized and for you to be someone to point out that you might be wrong. So I'm very used to and appreciate constructive criticism.
Sure.
And so that doesn't really, it doesn't bother me when people tell me stuff like, oh, I wouldn't have done this or I wouldn't have done that.
Right, right. Well, because you believe in yourself. I mean, that's the thing. You believe in what you're doing, and that's what matters. And I'm the same way. My mentor, Michael, his design and mine are very different. But I value his opinion immensely when it comes to the craftsmanship of it. Mm-hmm. And he knows that. He's never going to tell me like, oh, I would change this or change that, because he knows I'm happy with this design, and I'm the one who's probably my worst critic. Like, I'm going to always keep looking at it and stuff. But to have someone even come in and say, have you thought about this or thought about that? I'm not going to listen to it, but I'm probably still going to go with what I've been thinking about doing for it. You know what I'm saying? So I get
plus you're the one seeing the overall vision or the end result.
Right.
Correct. Yeah.
It's your design.
But I think when I first started the boxes, I probably would have been a little more unsure. But by the time I finished and I saw the response that they were getting, and I was all of a sudden, I was like, you know what? If I do what I love, if I do what I'm passionate about,
it's going to show.
People are going to like it.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Yeah. Now I don't really worry about it. Now I just do what
I do. Now you're not passionate about it at all.
I fucking hate it. Oh my god!
Especially comical panels, huh?
Yeah, it's killing me. Absolutely killing me.
It's really interesting, fascinating, really, that you know, as a professor, and then you know, now you're gonna—it's gonna be like a philosophy of box making. You know, the whys as well, correct? With your follow-up book.
Yeah, that's right. So my next book, which I've started work on, will be a book about the first book was about designing boxes, and the next book will be about making boxes. And I definitely have thoughts about how boxes should be made. And you know, a lot of it's tied into the boxes that I design, but I do think that there's, you know, a logical approach to box making, that, you know, it makes sense to do things this way or that way. And in the second book, I'm going to explain like this is how I do things, and this is why I do them that way. And like, if you want to have tight miters, here's what you got to do. And so it's good. Yeah, so the second book is about the how to make boxes, but it also explains why I do the things that I do.
That's gonna be awesome.
I think that's what you asked
me. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's gonna be cool. Yeah. You know,
and also lots of photographs of me in my underwear.
Yeah, and plaid, and on your bench.
Plaid underwear.
Plaid underwear. Now I can't remember what I was gonna say. I'm thinking plaid underwear on Matt Kenny.
You always get the
shot. You're not a good fault, man.
You mean Kameko patterns.
Kameko patterns. Yeah. Someone's going to now make those. Oh, boxes. Okay, yeah, boxes. I just had a, not boxer shorts, but boxes. I had a cabinet at a show, which if you're going to put something in a show that's going to have like, you know, thousands of people coming through, they kill it, man. They put your stuff through the ringer. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But a little kid pulled one of my jewelry boxes out of the cabinet and dropped it on the ground.
If you put your furniture in the food court at the mall, A, it's not a show. Two, you've got to expect that some kid with hands is going to come along.
Hey, look, we all have to start somewhere, okay?
Yeah.
All right, and it was a pretty nice fast food chain. You know, it wasn't a MacD's.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because I was there and the kid was with his mother and I heard the box hit the ground. And I look up and I didn't even go over. Leslie Webb was with me and she's like, "You're going to go say something?" I'm like, "What's the point?" She's like, "You think it's broken?" I'm like, "I know it's broken. Those little miters, they weren't reinforced at all." And that shock of it hitting the ground. And yeah, it popped open three of the miters. And not like totally. It didn't blow open. I can re-glue them, but yeah.
But they bought it, right?
Yeah, right. No, I didn't say anything. So whatever. Anyhow.
Great. You guys want to hear a story about something that I did that was like that?
Yes.
So I started the last couple of years I was at the magazine. I started working with Garrett Hack a lot, or several times. So I go up to Garrett's shop for a photo shoot, and he's got this cabinet that he's working on, and it's like all of Garrett's work. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's not done yet, but it has all these like hidden compartments and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he's like, hey, Garrett, one of the things he does is like put little tiny drawers in weird places.
Right.
And he's like, hey, see, pull that drawer out. And so it's a very tiny, delicate drawer. And I start pulling it out, and it's curved. The drawer is curved. And he's like, look at that. He's like, it's curved. It's curved. He's like, keep pulling it. Keep pulling it. So I keep pulling it.
Oh, no.
And I'm barely holding on to it because it's so small and delicate. And he had not put the stop in yet. So I pull it all the way out, and it falls out of my, to the ground. And he wasn't looking at the time, but he heard the sound, and he was like, did you do? Fortunately.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is probably like a $20,000 piece or something. Fortunately, it didn't damage the drawer. I was like, Garrett, I am so sorry.
Wow.
man. Well, that wasn't your first visit working with him, was it?
No, it wasn't the first visit. It was my last.
It's probably the last, though.
It was the last.
Yeah, his pieces are, and maybe I don't know his work that well, but did he change direction, or has he always done those like really crazy, amazing little cabinets that there's nothing straight on it?
He's definitely developed through the years. Like initially, I think what Garrett perfected, what Garrett developed and was uniquely his was like a combination of Shaker and Federal design.
Right.
And recently,
man, crazy.
Yeah, and probably in the last maybe 5 to 10 years, he's started to get more. He's gotten away from that, and there's more curves involved. He does a lot of coopering.
Big time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's gotten more kind of artsy. It's beautiful. I mean, in the best sense of the word. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely art. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's an amazing designer, an amazing maker. And a person who has unbelievable control of the tools and materials of this craft.
Yeah.
For sure. I bet visiting other makers' shops
Phil,
is...
Well, he's like way, way, way better than Phil.
Oh. The fact you even put me in that same category, I'll just take that. So there's a chance I could be that good?
No, not really.
No. You know, we should drop this and just call up Garrett and see if he'll come.
Yeah. No, he won't.
I'm awesome. As long as you guys don't touch my drawers.
I'm only doing this because you guys promised me a pack of bologna if I did it.
Bologna sandwich.
Yeah.
I bet it was really cool visiting other makers' shops while you were with the magazine, yeah?
For sure. It was. It was a 10-year intensive learning process for me. When I did an article with somebody, it was a one-on-one class with that person. Mm. And I could ask them anything I wanted to. And then I went to their shop and watched them do that thing. So, I learned how to make curved panels, in the vacuum press from Michael Fortune.
Yeah, and awesome.
I've learned how to cut a lot of joinery. Like I improved my hand cut joinery by working with Chris Gochner. And, so I learned a ton about routers by working with Greg Paolini. And so pretty much not every article, there are some articles where the people I worked with are assholes. And
Hey.
Most of them were in Wimberley, Texas.
First name Philip. I was effing terrified when you came out. I'll just tell
middle
you
name, middle name Chav.
Chav.
I do remember Phil. Phil was really nervous when I showed up, and it was funny.
Was
it was
so
really
nervous.
Funny. Yeah, it was funny. But because I was just there doing my job, it was. It was a really intense 10 years where I built a lot, I learned a lot, and I don't think I can underestimate the importance of being close friends with Mike Pekovich and having Mike as a resource to throw ideas off of, because Mike's one of the best furniture makers alive today. He's an excellent designer, and technically Mike is just, I mean, his mind is unbelievable when it comes to the technical side of woodworking. Like Michael Fortune. Michael Fortune is just a freaking wizard. You know, and to be able to watch these people work and to ask them questions and to have them happily answer you was a privilege beyond belief for me. And I definitely, without working at the magazine, if I had not gone there, I would not be where I am today.
Interesting.
Yeah, for sure I wouldn't be.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing opportunity.
Yeah, I'd probably be like this guy Ben y'all keep referencing.
some lonely guy in South Dakota.
Oh, God. This guy's in South Dakota.
Scratch that.
Yeah. Jeez. I wouldn't have been that bad.
Nice. So with the 52 boxes, sorry to go back to it, but do you think you had a design voice before it? Or, I mean, you certainly, I think, have one now that it's done. Do you think you had it before, or do you think it was something that developed through that process?
Well, when I started, there were definitely a handful of things that I had made that were, you could look at now and you could identify as stuff that I, like, oh, that's clearly got his stink on it. but I do think that through the process of making all those, without a doubt, I developed an aesthetic that is identifiable as me. But I don't think that's hard to do. I think what you have to do is, like, everyone, when you look at the world, you see it in a particular way. You know, like, the stuff that I notice in the world is different than the stuff that, say, Phil or Mike Pekovich notice in the world. And you have to see what it is, that how you look at the world. And that's what I did. I was like, this is the stuff that I notice. I notice patterns. I notice geometry. I notice colors. I notice lines.
And textures and all that.
Yeah, and it's like, that's the stuff that grabs me when I'm looking at the world. And I started to make stuff that reflected that, you know, that way of looking at the world. And because that's, in some way, you know, the way I look at the world is unique to me, I ended up being able to make stuff that was unique. But I think anyone can do that. You know, you just have to take the time to be quiet and take the time to think about how you interpret the world to figure that stuff out, and then you can start to work with it and develop it.
Yeah, see, I just don't have any quiet in my life.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
well, you can't do that with five kids.
Yeah, Phil. I mean, you know, I'm not gonna,
give me 10 years. Don't just stop.
Yeah, just stop now.
No, that's really cool, man. I like that. That's very cool. Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to put all 52 boxes in order, time frame?
Oh yeah, for sure I could. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's probably like neuro associations with each one. You know, like, okay, when I was, you know, box number 33, you know, I had this going on in my life.
Maybe? No? I don't. Well, I mean, I've not been. If people follow me on Instagram, they know that I have not hidden what's happened in my life the last, say, 3 or so years since I started making the boxes. It's been rather tumultuous.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could say, like, when I was making this box, this happened. Right. But it's more just like, I know what order I made them in.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know,
I can't remember what I did yesterday.
Yeah. But Phil definitely knows what order his babies were born in.
I think. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I can't keep count.
If you go into his office, he has pictures of them, and he has number one next to one of them.
Hey, I know you're not with the magazine anymore, but when I signed that contract and you signed it saying you couldn't share my personal information, just because you're not with the magazine anymore. No, you know, I was really tempted to put like a big picture and frame it of you up on my shop or something. I heard one of your podcasts that someone did that in the restroom or something. They had one of your magazines when you went to go do an article. So, yeah. And my wife stopped me. I was like, come on.
That's awesome.
It's funny that Phil acts this way, because Phil is a fantastic furniture maker, and he's a better furniture maker than I am, for sure.
Oh, yeah, right.
He is, without a doubt. I mean, he is, though. I mean, he's this rough and tumble guy from London, which is, you know, and I'm a sophisticated Southern gentleman. But
you're a doctor, and
I'm a doctor. Yeah. So I was always tickled when, because Phil would act that way, and I'm like, Phil, come on, you're a fantastic furniture maker. It was Hank Gilpin, who is just an unbelievable designer and maker. He's just phenomenal.
Is he on Instagram? Does anybody know?
No, he's not.
Seriously doubt it.
Yeah, he's not.
Some of those guys. I mean, it's like, come on.
Yeah. I'm not sure Hank is even on this planet.
Yeah. Right.
That's awesome.
But
he's amazing.
The first time I went to work with him, I had not been at the magazine very long, and there had been this article where it was a review of bench vices, and the guy that reviewed them picked the Veritas twin screw vice as the best overall. And Mike wanted to shoot something for the cover, and I happened to own that vice on my bench, and so we went and shot it in my shop. And so this was like within 4 or 5 issues of me being at the magazine, I was on the cover of the magazine, right? It's right. Not just, it's like my face and everything. And so Gilpin knew that somehow, and so he knew that eventually that day when I was at his shop in his house, that I'd want to go to the bathroom. So so he put this like magazine rack directly across from the toilet, so like if you were sitting on the toilet you would see it, and like front and center was that mag issue with me on the cover. And because he wanted me to go in there and think that he sits on the toilet and looks at the issue of me on the cover.
That's awesome. Yeah, that guy does some wild stuff, man.
Really, it's
funny though, seeing he's changed. I mean, I know everybody changes, but I just went to his website. I don't know if he has a couple of guys working for him now, but you can see his style has evolved a little bit.
Yeah.
He's really gone to some crazy woods and stuff.
Went to his website. Another example of y'all's crack research.
Oh, yeah. Well, how the heck did we know you're going to fucking mention him, huh? Like I said, I don't remember what I did yesterday.
Crack research.
Come on, man. We're not being filmed, so it's all good. I'm in my boxer shorts.
Plaid.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen you in your boxer shorts. It's always
and on the trampoline, too, right?
Yes.
Well, hey, so I would love to hear a little bit, you know, like you said, you've had quite a lot happen in the last 2 years, and you're not with the magazine anymore. But, I mean, it seems like it hasn't slowed you down at all, and really probably a blessing in disguise. But you just got back from Australia. Would you mind talking a little bit about kind of what you've got coming up as far as classes? You spoke about the new book. Are you, you know, you're doing commission work? Just a little bit about kind of what you see the future for you being out of the magazine.
Yeah, well, mostly it involves a tent and an overpass.
Hey, I've got a room.
Yeah, I'm gonna come down. I'm gonna be Phil's 10th kid.
There you go.
So I am doing commission work, but I'm also something I want to do, that, which really is important to me, is that I can't afford the stuff that I make, right? If I were to make a buck, I couldn't afford to buy it.
Right.
And I want to make stuff that is affordable to the average person.
Right, right.
And so one thing that I'm really excited about is I've done that once on Instagram, and it got a really good response. I made a Kumiko panel, and, you know, I said, hey, if 20 people will commit to buying this, I can make it at a price that y'all can afford.
Yeah.
And that turned out well, and I'm looking forward to doing that more. But I'm also doing commission work and some spec work. I'm writing, and I also have started a podcast. We've recorded an episode.
Nice. And what's it called?
It is called the Matt and Joe Woodworking Fun Hour.
Says you're bullshitting with us a lot.
It's not available yet, but it will be. And when it is, I'll announce it on my Instagram and stuff. But it's real, Phil. It's going to be real.
Awesome. That's awesome.
I have you scheduled for the fifth year.
For the fifth year. Thanks. After this, you think I'm going to go on your podcast? Come on.
But yeah, I'm doing a lot of teaching, and people can go to my website, mekwoodworks.com, and they can see my teaching schedule, and they can also buy stuff for me through my website.
Awesome.
I'm doing a lot of teaching. I was just in Australia in October, teaching
there. How was that? I mean, that had to be an amazing experience.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was amazing. It was absolutely life-changing for me.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
2 weeks? Two weeks, right?
Yeah, I was there for a little over 2 weeks, roughly 2 weeks, and I'm going back to teach again in January, and I'll be there for like 2.5 weeks. And, you know, like right now as we record this, I'm in Washington State doing two weekend courses in outside of Seattle. In a tremendously beautiful area. I can see Mount Rainier from my bedroom when I wake up in the morning.
Awesome. That sounds great.
Yeah, so I'm teaching a lot. You know, I've got classes at Mark Adams, Anderson Ranch, Barta School of Woodwork, Peters Valley Crafts School.
That's fantastic.
Be doing that. Yeah.
What topic will you be teaching at Anderson Ranch?
That is a class on box making.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love
that
place.
Yeah, I've never been. I'm excited to go there.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What time of the year will you be up there, do you think?
I believe this
coming summer?
Yes, this coming summer. I believe it's right at the end of August.
Yeah, good time to be there.
Yeah, but there is a, on my website, there's a page that lists all my teaching. It doesn't list this, what I'm doing right now, but that's because this was a weird setup in terms of
it's more for private.
It's kind of private. So, but all my teaching at public schools, you know, that's all listed there.
And is the Austin School of Furniture and Design, is that on your website yet?
It's not on my website yet, but if you guys would like me to come down to Austin, I will gladly do it.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna make that happen.
Yeah, I would love to come down there and do that. I love teaching. I wanted to be a college professor because I wanted to teach. And
that's awesome.
Working at the magazine was like teaching. And now I love teaching. I love meeting people who want to learn this craft that I love. And
right.
I love sharing what little knowledge I have with them. And I like to see people get excited about it. And that's what teaching does.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's really cool. Well, man, it sounds like you're busy. That's good. And you're finishing out your shop, right?
Yep. I moved to a new house in April. And I just did the last coat of joint compound on the drywall. So when I get back home, I'm going to sand it and paint it. And my
it should be dry.
Plenty of time.
So I'm just, I'm just about done with the shop, and that'll let me start doing. One thing I'm going to do with the podcast that I'm doing is I'm going to do video content for YouTube that corresponds to what we're doing on the podcast.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I'll be doing, I have other ideas for what to do, things that I wanted to do before, but wasn't really in a position to do.
Right.
But now, you know, I was lucky that when I through the magazine, I met a lot of great furniture makers, and a lot of them have interesting stories and interesting ways of life. Right. And so I think, so, you know, I'll cover some of that as well.
That's really cool. Yeah, man, that work for the magazine's opened up a lot of doors for you, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I would absolutely not be in the position I am now without my stint at Fine Woodworking, but at the same time, I'm not being there anymore has, I think, opened up new opportunities to me that will allow me to flourish.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah. Plus, I don't have to worry about Pekovich doing weird things to me anymore.
Rubbing up against you anymore.
Yeah.
I kind of figured there's something a little odd about that guy.
Yeah.
The nice thing is he will never listen to this podcast.
No, he absolutely will not. He definitely would not. I mean, I'm not even going to listen to it.
I don't blame you.
We don't either.
We don't.
I don't know if anyone does.
Are we recording?
My mother. My mother, yeah. Your kids?
My kids.
Yeah, no, Mike is an absolute sweetheart, an absolutely wonderful person. Anyway,
that's really cool. Awesome.
Yeah, I don't want people to think that I'm just mean or making fun of him. I admire Mike tremendously.
No, that came across.
It comes across.
Yeah, you're mean to me, but that's
yeah,
it's because he likes you.
Yeah, it's because I like you, Phil.
It's because you like me, man. Did you hear that, people?
Yeah,
very cool.
Write that down, Phil.
Write it down. Yeah. Well, cool. Ben, you got any direction to go? We're getting close to the end of this.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's been great having you on, Matt. I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time. I know you're out in Washington right now, so you know we appreciate mm-hmm. you taking that time away from being out there.
Yeah. Well, I was just drinking beer tonight.
Nice. Appreciate you taking time with that too. So.
Yeah. It probably slowed the productivity down on the drinking beer a little bit. He's like, not really.
No. I was drinking beer and drawing robots. That's all I was doing.
So, okay, so the okay. Robots. One last thing, the robots.
I want to hear about that.
Yeah. You got a kids' book coming?
Oh, I mean, come on, don't be ridiculous. I just draw robots sometimes. I don't know what's going to happen. I've drawn for a long time, and someone, a friend of mine, has convinced me that I should do something with them. And it's going to be probably an Instagram feed.
Right.
But we'll see what goes from there. You know, there's a lot of stuff in my life that's woodworking related that in some ways I talk about anxiety and depression some on my Instagram feed. Right. It was just something that I've had to deal with. And I think I'm lucky to be in a position where I do have, like, just like Phil has a larger Instagram audience than me, and Ramon might as well, actually. But, you know,
I bought them all.
You bought them all? Okay. But there's things like that seem to resonate with people, which I didn't expect. But
oh, man, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely resonates with people. And so, you know, the robots might be an avenue for me to, deal with that issue better than through a woodworking Instagram feed, you know. But
that's really cool, man.
Yeah, there's stuff like that in my life that's not woodworking related that I'm working on, that I'm doing, but it just doesn't show up in my Instagram feed, you know.
Sure, that's really cool.
Well, the robots do.
Right, the robots do. Every now and then, they're cool, man. Yeah. I like them.
You mean you actually have something outside of your life that isn't on Instagram?
Yeah, right. If it doesn't, if it's not on Instagram, it doesn't happen.
What? And you have two accounts, right? What's your other account?
Oh, no, I have than two accounts. I only have two that are public.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have my main account is MEK Woodwork. And then I have an account called A Woodworker's Life, which is all black and white photography.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
You just posted a picture today of of the log, I guess, on the cabin. Was that what that was?
Yeah. So where I am this week is this guy's house is a like a log cabin. If awesome. You know, if the Taj Mahal was a log cabin, that's what it would be.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a really impressive, and the view from the property is just unbelievable. But yeah, I posted that picture of the end grain of the log, which was super tight grain, really beautiful. Yeah. But yeah, so I have that accounted well, which is more like my artsy black and white photography.
Yeah, which I think I have made an appearance, or at least my shop has. So there's that.
That's awesome.
There's that going for it too.
There's a portrait of you on there.
Is there really?
Yeah. In which you don't look like an idiot.
how did you manage to get that?
Photoshop.
It's not even my face.
But there's also one of the best photographs I've ever taken of your rocker in your shop.
I love that.
Yeah, that's a really good photograph. And but yeah, so I'm really passionate about photography as well.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of different avenues, man. That's so cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. You know, who knows? I'll probably still be living under a bridge in 6 months.
no way. Got too many skills. Too many skills with passion. So that's all we need. And not 10 kids.
Well, Matt, it's been fantastic. I've been looking forward to this since we first started talking about it. So we really appreciate you taking the time, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem. Anything for Phil, you know.
Now I'm in debt to you. Yeah. Like, was it one lounge chair or two lounge chairs?
There's three lounge chairs.
Three lounge chairs. Jeez, that got expensive. You're not that good. Yeah, man.
All right.
Thanks for coming on.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you all once again for tuning in to an entertaining and interesting episode of Woodworkers Podcast. We certainly appreciate it. If you have any questions, comments about this show, previous shows, or suggestions for topics on future shows, feel free to DM any one of us or leave us a note at our Woodworkers Podcast account. Also, we'd appreciate it if you would leave us a rating over at iTunes, you know, preferably 5 stars. And so on behalf of Ben, Phil, and the humorous, witty, and talented Matt Kenny, I'm Ramon, and we'll catch you right here on the next episode of Woodworkers Podcast. All right.
Cheers, guys. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye. Yeah.
Peace.